Good evening. Today is Friday, January 21st, 2011. I'm guest host Hatch Clymer.
And I'm Claire Eagle, and this is News 101.
It's current time. What time is it?
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us? Just a big mistake. Good evening, UBC. Its current time is 5:05 and time for a full hour of independent news.
Today, we will be discussing some recent controversy in the ongoing AMS elections and recent funding awarded to UBC by the Canadian Foundation for Innovation. In the Arts Report, Adam Yanush will highlight the Push Festival on now across Vancouver.
All this plus a special feature on African Awareness Initiative Conference Week. Right here on News 101, your source for independent, local, national, and international news.
But first, the headlines from Free Speech Radio News.
News briefs for FSRN. Gulab Mohammed, the Virginia teen who was stranded in Kuwait after being placed on the U.S. no-fly list, is back in the country today. He flew into a D.C. airport this morning and was reunited with his family. Mohammed's lawyer says he was detained and beaten by the Kuwaiti government on orders from the U.S. under suspicion of connection with terrorist organizations. He spoke to reporters today at the airport.
There's still probably other people out there that are being tortured like I was. And this is, my voice has been heard, but their voices are not being heard. You know, I can say this, I was told by the FBI agent that I could have been in a hole for 6 months and nobody would have known anything about me. So there's other Muslims or either non-Muslims that are still being tortured and that are being put on the no-fly list and they're not being charged with anything.
Mohammed's family says the teen had traveled to Yemen, Somalia, and Kuwait to visit family and to study Islam. Education protests have swelled once again this week in Puerto Rico, where students angered by increased tuition rates clashed with police. Students claim the $800 rise in tuition will limit access to education. Video of yesterday's protests, posted by Puerto Rico Indie Media, shows dozens of students at the University of Puerto Rico staging a sit-in. They lined the concrete at three different campus gates, linking their arms as police moved in and forcibly removed them. Police are shown taking protesters away in vans. The Puerto Rico Journalist and Photojournalist Associations have released a joint statement condemning police action towards media professionals trying to cover the education protests. According to the communique, police have kicked cameras and forbidden members of the media from going onto campus. Across the globe in the Netherlands, as many as 15,000 students and professors protested in The Hague. They're angry about a government proposal to charge $4,000 more per year to students who take longer than 4 years to complete a 3-year university degree. A UN official warns that conditions are ripe for genocide in the West African nation of Cote d'Ivoire. Their president, Laurent Gbagbo, still refuses to step down, despite having lost national elections last year. Special Representative Edward Luck says he's particularly concerned that state media has been encouraging violence.
Well, there's a lot of radio announcements that tend to sow dissent among the people, that tend to suggest that people of one group favor one candidate, people from another group favor another candidate. And it's very dangerous when the politics within a country begin to divide along ethnic or religious lines.
In addition, Luck says he has received reports of arms being imported into Cote d'Ivoire and being distributed to youth groups that may not be willing to exercise restraint. And that's News Briefs for Free Speech Radio News. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
Thanks to FSRN for bringing us those headlines. Daily headlines and their full newscast can be found at fsrn.org. I'm Hatch Clymer.
And I'm Claire Eagle. And now, it's time for your local News 101 headlines. In campus news, current AMS president Bijan Ahmadian has released a controversial video on his personal blog making endorsements in this week's AMS election. He supported the opponents of both current AMS members, VP Finance Ilan Tayar, who is running for re-election, and VP External Jeremy McElroy, who hopes to replace Ahmadian as president. Ahmadian most directly attacked McElroy, saying that he, quote, has a poor work ethic and a very adversarial approach when dealing with authority figures, end quote. He has gone on to campaign on behalf of those he endorses, such as Michael Mull for president and Matt Parson for VP Academic. The personal nature of Ahmadian's video has been condemned by both the current VP Academic Ben Capellacci and VP Administration Ekaterina Dovienko. Capellacci told the UBC that, quote, the accusations that Bijan makes in his video are of the utmost slander that I've ever seen a person in student politics utter. I'm personally quite disgusted by what he said, end quote.
In campus news, the University of British Columbia has come out in defense of its medical experimentations on monkeys. UBC's practices were first brought to light by a story in the province on January 18, 2011. According to the story, the university has monkeys injected, tested, and then euthanized for post-mortem analysis, possibly as part of a research into Parkinson's disease. In a letter to the province, UBC Vice President John Hepburn responded to the criticisms for the experimentation, stating that, quote, the inflammatory and sensational nature of this article detracts from the tragedy faced by sufferers of Parkinson's disease and their families, wrote Hepburn. He went on to state that UBC complies fully with federal animal care standards, the same standards that require humane treatment during the life of research animals also stipulate they must be euthanized using humane, painless procedures. End quote. Despite the university's best efforts, there has been a surge of emails and online comments condemning the practice. Some have gone on as far as offering to buy the monkeys their freedom.
In sports news, the San Jose Sharks signed Jordan White, the 22-year-old starting goalkeeper for the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, to a one-game amateur tryout and placed him in the backup role for their game against the Vancouver Canucks last night. Regular goaltender Antero Nitimaki was hurt during the morning skate, which by then was too late to contract a backup goaltender from the Sharks' AHL farm team, the Worcester Sharks. Said Jordan White of UBC Thursday night, I've been a Canucks supporter for a while, but not tonight. White took some shots during the warm-up while wearing jersey number 35, but did not see any action. The Sharks went on to defeat the Canucks in shootout 2-1.
Third-year UBC music student Paul Hung has been selected to play in the 2011 YouTube Symphony Orchestra. The Taiwanese-born flutist was one of the five Canadians chosen to be a part of the collaborative online international orchestra, which saw thousands of submission videos. The 336 finalists were chosen via online public voting. Hung studies with Lorna McGee in the UBC Music Department and has been involved in the UBC Symphonic Wind Ensemble, the UBC Symphony Orchestra, the Vancouver Youth Symphony, and the UBC Contemporary Players, among others. Hung will be joining 100 other musicians in Sydney, Australia, under the leadership of a Grammy Award-winning conductor, Michael Tilson Thomas, from March 14th to the 20th.
In Canvas News, UBC announced today that the Canada Foundation for Innovation, or the CFI, has awarded a grant of $2.8 million to the university for research in nanotechnology, neuroscience, social work, the environment, and consumer psychology. These funds were part of $61 million that were granted to 246 projects in 48 institutions across Canada. Among the projects funded is Professor Darren Dahl's research on the most efficient models for cooperation and co-creation between consumers and businesses. Dr. Dahl is a professor at the Sauder School of Business and is the chair of the school's marketing division. Dahl will take an experimental approach to enhance the interactions between consumers and businesses, adding to existing knowledge on consumer psychology and aiding managers in seeking to improve the co-creation process.
We're going to take a quick break now, but stay with us and stay classy. I'm Hatch Clymer, and you're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Boy and girl coming home from school look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date, dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
The Pendulum Restaurant, your source for fresh dishes made in-house. The Pendulum boasts a large selection of vegan dishes, a comfortable atmosphere, and tasty breakfasts. On sunny days, you can also enjoy the licensed patio. Conveniently located next to the pit, the Pendulum is open 7 days a week. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. Hey, as far as I'm the best, my time's a bird.
CITR, Beatroot Magazine, and AMS Events are proud to present two amazing shows at the Biltmore. February 5th, come see The Blow with Sunny and the Sunsets. This is an early show with doors at 8 and curfew at 11. February 8th, check out Vancouver's Teen Days with Yip Deceiver and Sugar and Gold, both of which are side projects for members of Montreal. This is another early show with doors at 8 and curfew at 11. Advance tickets for both shows are available from Zulu, Red Cat, and The Biltmore.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm guest host Hatch Clymer. You are hearing us on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca. Broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia. Its current time is 5:16. And time for your News 101 Arts Report. For that, we go to Adam Janus, who will be telling us about the La Marea performance at the Push Festival here in Vancouver.
Director Mariano Pansotti has toured around the world with a unique street theater production called La Marea, the tide in Spanish. It's coming to the 0100 block of Water Street next week and promises to wow intentional audiences and random passersby alike. The small scenes, which include things like a couple's first kiss and a motorcycle crash, all include projected script that expresses the thoughts of the characters. The opening up of internal personal worlds in a public space naturally brings to question the very idea of privacy. And Mariano believes our modern idea of privacy is a relatively recent invention. So we talk about all these things. We talk about the show and where privacy is going in this internet age. But first, here he is explaining how the idea of La Marea came together.
Well, I think it's based on a very simple situation, which is when you're in a street or in a public place and you start to look at someone that you don't know and try to imagine how could be the life of that person or how could be the thoughts of that person. So I used to spend a lot of time, you know, in public places such as bars, looking at strange strangers or passerby in the street and trying to imagine how could be the life of those persons. And I think that was the starting point of the performance.
Mm-hmm. And from that time, it's evolved into quite a large project, to the point that you'll be taking over an entire city block here in Vancouver. And I understand that in Montreal you had an incident where there was a car crash scene, and people actually thought that there was a car crash going on. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think, well, the performance, it works a lot with this strange borderline between fiction and reality. Mm-hmm. Because the performance is composed by nine different scenes which are performed at the same time in a real street, and the scenes itself, they look like, well, like just people who are there at night. And mm-hmm. as you said, one of the scenes is a motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. And it's quite realistic, and in Montreal someone called an ambulance because they thought that it was a real accident. And for me, it's interesting when people start to doubt about if the scene is a real situation or is just a fake.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and I wonder if you encourage that? Do you encourage these scenarios where real life enters the fictional space?
For me, it's always interesting, this mixture. In a way, I think I'm interested in to place fiction in a real place and to see how our fiction transform that real place, but also to see how the real place transform our fiction. Mm-hmm. I think it's a work that works in both directions.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose you see that because it's been done in many cities around the world, and I guess you see that play out, that every city makes it different. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a performance that changes a lot in each city. First, because we do an adaptation of the text of the scenes to make it more local. Then I work with the local actors, and of course the approach that the actors have to each scene, it changes on each city, and the street itself, the.
That was Adam Janusz discussing the Push Festival happening now in Vancouver.
It's now time for your weekly City Hall update with Megan Turcato.
You people up there in City Hall, this is a song for the people in the streets and the people, City Hall.
City Hall makes a lot of little decisions that affect us all in big ways. This segment asks, what happened at City Hall this week? This week marks the first week back for city councillors since they broke for winter break. Here's a little of what will be debated at City Hall this week. Last spring, Premier Gordon Campbell announced the province's plans to build an entertainment complex in the area next to BC Place. The plan calls for two new hotels and the relocation and expansion of the Edgewater Casino. The casino is expected to bring in over $1 million in gambling revenue yearly. However, two area community associations have passed motions asking the city to reject the plan, citing concerns over organized crime. Council votes on the matter on Tuesday and is expected to call for public hearings on the proposed development. Council will also vote to change the Northeast False Creek development plan. These changes will apply to all new construction in the area, mainly the casino hotel complex that we just discussed. The amendments will require this new development to hire area residents and buy locally. However, the specific details of these requirements will be worked out later. Normally, any new residential complex in Northeast Falks Creek would be required to make 20% of the units affordable housing. The proposed amendment would waive this condition for one Concord-owned property, on the condition that the company give the city two sites it owns on Hastings Street. The city plans to use the land for affordable housing. Vision Vancouver councillor Andrea Reimer wants Vancouverites to have the option of voting online in this year's municipal elections. The hope is that casting an e-ballot would increase Vancouver's low election turnouts. Less than 35% of Vancouverites came out to vote in the last two civic elections. Council will vote on whether to go ahead with the proposal tomorrow. Those who like to sip their drinks and grab some grub in the great outdoors may soon have new options. The city is considering a proposal this week to increase the number of food vendors in the city. City planners think it will help make city streets more pedestrian-friendly. Additionally, a Gastown pub, the Blarney Stone, is applying for a permit this week to add an outdoor sidewalk patio. That was your City Hall update to Monday, January 17th. I'm Megan Turcato for News 101.
Thanks as always to Megan for bringing that for us. That was a wonderful and beautiful thing you just did. Thank you again, Megan.
Be sure to tune in on Monday for our weekly City Hall report, as well as our weekly arts report, usually playing on Monday evenings from 5 to 6 on News 101. We're going to take a quick break, but be sure to stay with us. I'm Claire Eagle, and you're listening to News 101.
www.citr.ca.
I can listen to them and go, this is really cool stuff. And people don't make music like this. They never have, and they never will. I can listen to them and go, this is really cool stuff. And people don't make music like this. They never have, and they never will.
It's now time for a special report on the African Awareness Initiative Conference Week, happening now.
Thanks, Hatch. The Africa Awareness Initiative Conference Week has included events such as a panel on research on Africa, the performance of a monologue, and an open mic night at Kerner's Pub last night. Fellow reporter Iqbal Ahmed and I attended the discussion on Africa and international human rights on Wednesday at the Liu Center at UBC's Global Institute, which was hosted by UBC professor Dr. Michael Byers.
My name is Mehek Tejani, and I am the VP External of Africa Awareness Initiative.
Great. So what did you think of Dr. Byers' talk just now?
I think it was really great, and the turnout was amazing, and we had a really strong dialogue afterwards, and that's what we intended for, is not only for the speakers to come in and give their perspective on Africa, but for the audience and for the students and the UBC community to get involved and get immersed in this discussion, and that's what we expect and what we anticipated out of the conference week every year is to get this sort of dialogue and discussion going on outside of classroom. So, yeah, it's been good.
And do you feel like the other events that have gone on so far this week have also sparked this? Or?
Yes, definitely. In our opening night, we had Vice President Research and International, Dr. John Hepburn there. We had the Dean of Arts, VP Students, Dr. Brian Sullivan over there. So we've had speakers come in and give their perspective and also support from all the UBC community, staff members from International House, International Student Advisors, students from International Student Society on campus, and so many different places. We see that energy and we see that enthusiasm for creating this African Studies program into a reality, for sure.
And so beyond, I guess, just plain awareness, what are the hopes that you have that students are going to take from this conference? As this audience definitely showed, it's a very diverse crowd who came out, so what do you hope they'll be motivated to do or to act upon?
Well, as mentioned earlier on in the talk, the three things that we target towards as part of the Africa Awareness Initiative is one is to increase awareness and create such dialogue and discussion, but the other one, very important one, is to have an African Studies program on campus. Currently, we have a really inconsistent African Studies minors program, and that's something that we've been lobbying for a really long time. We've talked to the UBC Senate Student Caucus. We've met with the President too this past summer, and we've had Dr. John Heffern also talk about his perspective on where UBC is taking Africa in its academics. So it's great to see the diverse group of students that are here, but what we anticipate and what we want to see happen is that all these students drive UBC into creating a strong African studies program.
Great, thanks so much. The speaker, Dr. Michael Byers from UBC's Political Science Department, then took the stage. Dr. Byers holds a Canada Research Chair in Global Politics and International Law and has taught at Duke and Oxford in addition to his current post at UBC. He has published 6 books, dozens of academic papers, and more than 100 op-ed pieces in newspapers around the world. Dr. Byers spoke on the International Criminal Court and its role both in Africa and around the world, and called for the expansion of its investigations into conflict regions outside of Africa. He then opened discussion on the current situation in the Ivory Coast.
Africa is a very large, complex country with more than 50 nation states. It has great leaders, has good governments, and it also has some bad ones. But what I'm saying is that there is one country right now, the Ivory Coast, that is in the spotlight, and there is a serious human rights problem there, and this isn't just a question of studying it.
After a brief discussion on the current instability in the Ivory Coast due to the disputed election between incumbent President Laurent Gbagbo and President-elect Alassane Ouattara, Dr. Byers introduced the crowd to a new facet of the situation in the Ivory Coast.
There's another less well-reported dimension to the situation, and that concerns the principal export of the Ivory Coast. Does anyone know what the principal export of the Ivory Coast is?
Is it cocoa?
It's cocoa. It's cocoa. The Ivory Coast produces 40% of the world's cocoa bean supply. Cocoa beans will only grow in certain places in the world. If the temperature ever drops below 17 degrees Celsius, the cocoa plants die. They need to grow underneath the canopy. And they grow particularly well in the Ivory Coast and Ghana. Between those two countries, they account for almost 80% of the world's, well, let's be frank, chocolate supply. Right? What does chocolate have to do with Gbagbo? Well, if it's the largest export, it generates hard currency. There's also oil industry, which generates hard currency too. And this funds his army. It buys military equipment. It buys protection from sanctions and other inconveniences of various kinds, particularly if there are sanctions, you just smuggle the cocoa out into Togo or Ghana, and then off to the Netherlands and markets overseas. But it's not just the cocoa. It's the people who work on the plantations of the Ivory Coast. Tens of thousands of whom are children under the age of 14. They're trafficked in many cases from neighboring countries, handed over to the traffickers by their parents in the hope that they will find work in the Ivory Coast and send remittances home. And when they arrive in the Ivory Coast, many of them find themselves in slavery. There's no other word to describe it. They're not paid. They're forced to work on plantations. Most of them never get to school. The working conditions are quite hazardous. Strong pesticides, working with machetes. Many of them are kept under lock and key at night so that they will not flee. They're also often malnourished. This has been known for quite a while. Some 5 or 6 years ago, Carol Off, who hosts As It Happens for CBC Radio, wrote a book called Bittersweet about the child slaves of the Ivory Coast. But now we have a situation where the international community is all of a sudden heavily focused on the Ivory Coast. There's talk about the fact that democracy is not being respected. There's the possibility of a military intervention. And I challenge you to find more than a couple of reports that mention the child slaves. A couple weeks ago, I wrote an article with a friend of mine named Rafi, the musician. Most of you, many of you, are what are called beluga grads. Rafi is a friend and a neighbor, and he's also a human rights activist and a children's rights activist. He has a center for child honor and is working on issues like climate change and intergenerational equity and writing and singing songs about human rights issues. And so we got together and wrote an article, which was published in the Ottawa Citizen, about the child slaves of the Ivory Coast. And essentially, what we said, well, we said two things. First of all, if ECOWAS wants to intervene militarily to remove Gbagbo and install the new democratically elected president, then countries like Canada should support ECOWAS in that effort. With the Security Council resolution, with equipment, logistics of various kinds, and make a serious commitment to helping the new government of the Ivory Coast develop, and in the course of that development, to end the child slavery ASAP. To pay these children for the wages they were not paid, to help them go home to their families, and to create a cocoa industry in the Ivory Coast that is fair and equitable. That this should be one of the reasons for intervening and should be at the core of our foreign policy as we think about how we can help the Ivory Coast to recover from this crisis. It's not just about democracy. Democracy is important, but ending child slavery is important too. And the second thing we said was that this is not just an issue for governments. This is an issue for everyone. Because most people buy chocolate. Right? Valentine's Day is coming up. Right? And this is like chocolate orgy time, right? February 14th. And then there's Easter, right? And Mother's Day. And then in October, there's Halloween, right? I don't know about you, but I eat a lot of chocolate. In North America, we eat $16 billion worth of chocolate each year. And most of it comes from the Ivory Coast, from Ghana. And because of the instability within the Ivory Coast over the last more than a decade, and the decline of the quality control within the cocoa industry in the Ivory Coast following on from that instability, and because of all the slave labor, which reduces the price, the cheaper chocolate that you buy is more likely to come from the Ivory Coast. That Mars bar you have, stuff you bought at the convenience store to get you through those exams in December, along with that coffee. Oh, coffee. Fair trade coffee. We're all accustomed to seeing the fair trade advertisement. Coffee. Have you seen any advertisements for fair trade chocolate? Like, a few. You see, there is fair trade chocolate. Most of it comes from Latin America. It's a little bit more expensive because they don't use slaves. So Rafi and I are thinking about trying to spark a civil society movement for just chocolate. Think about it. Chocolate that is produced in a just, equitable, human rights respecting way. Then we'd have to pay a little bit more for our chocolate. But we're very powerful because we eat a lot of it. And chocolate, well, it's not that expensive. We're talking about a little bit more. And of course, as you pay more, you're getting a higher quality chocolate, which means that it probably tastes better, so it's not really, even from that perspective, a difficult thing. So what we want to do is we want to change people's awareness. That if you're going in to buy that Mars bar, you might well be buying chocolate that was produced by a child's life. Fair trade chocolate that's beside it on the shelf and more expensive might be the thing to do, so that you can not just enjoy the taste, but you can feel morally sound in so doing. And don't ever say that this can't work. One of the great things about this UBC African Awareness Initiative is that it is actually identifying connections, building on foundations that are already there. It's not as if UBC has no connection with Africa. I just illustrated a couple. This letter that a UBC prof wrote to the International Criminal Court, the chocolate that we all eat, and not to see the Alma Mater Society declare that only fair trade coffee will be sold in the sub. You know what a small but meaningful advocacy project? There's one for you. Student council elections are taking place. Ask the candidates whether they'll support a ban on fair trade chocolate sold through the sub. There are all kinds of connections. There are thousands of connections, and this room is very, very powerful. I mean, you guys own the sub, right? I mean, that's your part of the university. Right? That's not UBC jurisdiction. That's Alma Mater Society. And student-initiated fair trade movements have had success elsewhere in the past. So maybe this is where it starts. And the wonderful thing about social movements is that once they get going, they snowball. And that's, I mean, my instinct on this one tells me that this issue is just so intuitively powerful. Children and chocolate, right? I mean, who doesn't get the fact that children and chocolate should be a good news story rather than a bad news story? I mean, the tension, the hypocrisy, the emotive power of this, I mean, everyone cares about children. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where they're from, it doesn't matter the color of their skin, we all care about children.
During the reception that followed Dr. Byers' well-received discussion, we were able to talk to the president of the Africa Awareness Initiative and ask her thoughts on the conference.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Regina Nyamiche, and I'm the president of the Africa Awareness Initiative 2010-2011. And this week's conference, under the theme Africa, a Place of Promise, is just trying to celebrate all the beautiful things about Africa. We're looking at leadership, we're looking at the cultural parts of Africa. We're hoping to engage with the UBC, especially when it comes to academia, in having more courses, African-related courses, and allowing students to meet and have dialogues, like what we just had this evening with Dr. Byers and Africa and international human rights. And basically, more people start to see the different sides of Africa. There's no one singular story when it comes to Africa. There's diversity, there's creativity, there's humanity. We're hoping this week it's just a big celebration of Africa, exploring Africa again. And at the end of the conference week, we're hoping more students can be able to engage with Africa. It has to go beyond, let's go and save Africa. We want people to start thinking, how about we engage with Africa? How about we work with Africa? So this is what Africa Awareness
Congress is trying to do this week.
And how do you feel the response has been so far to the event?
It's been very great. Our opening event, we had UBC Vice President Research and International, Dr. John Heaven. He was there, and he's actually working on an internationalization strategy right now and trying to see where Africa's place is at UBC. And he asked students to be able to go take a look at the strategy and stuff, advice on how UBC can better engage with Africa. There are up close to about 200 students who have been coming in and out of our events. UBC Vice President student, Mr. Brian Sullivan, was there. The Dean of Arts was also there, Gage Avril. We had Janet Mead, Director of Access and Diversity, Alan Sens, Political Science Professor. But there were different people there, different people who are passionate and genuinely interested in Africa. We've had an event yesterday. It was a monologue, and the response was fantastic. So far, it's been excellent.
And I think definitely in going what you said, even the crowd we had here today was so diverse and so engaged. And I guess, how does this make you feel about the future for, I guess, the Africa Awareness Initiative and what it's trying to do on campus?
I think it looks really, really bright in a very, very special way. Apart from just winning the 2010 AMS Global Citizenship Award for our African Dream campaign, which goes under the theme Involving Africa in the Creation of Global Citizens. And as UBC students, we like to feel as if we are global citizens, global leaders who can actually change the world. And the global community has to involve Africa in some way, because you can't just talk about Africa or Africans without having African expertise on it. There's also an African Studies Committee that's been formed from the President's office. We met with him this summer. He actually has a picture of Nelson Mandela in his office, and he's very, very supportive of what Africa Awareness is doing. I think there's lots of hope. We need to have more hard work, have more students on board, so it's not just Africans talking about Africa, because clearly there are more students who are really interested in Africa, and we all need to get on board and do the best we can for Africa.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And that was our special coverage on UBC's Africa Awareness Initiative Conference Week. The wrap-up event, Sikaliza, A Toast to Mama Africa, will be taking place tonight at the Abdulatta Center from 7:30 onwards. Tickets are $7 for members and $10 for non-members. More information can be found at www.africaawareness.ca. Just one more reminder that AMS elections are currently taking place. You have until tomorrow at 5 o'clock to vote. Voter turnout so far is only 4.8% of the student body, and we really hope to see more engaged student involvement to make a difference in our student government. As well, CITR News Team is currently looking for volunteers and reporters to help us produce our show. If you're interested, email us at news@citr.ca.
And that's our program for January 11th, 2011. Today's 21st. Today's newscast has brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. Also, if you'd like to share your comments, get involved with the show, give us a hot news tip, please contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. We are currently looking for intrepid reporters to join our news team, so please contact us if you are interested. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter with the username CITRNews. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows at CITR.ca. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m., Monday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm guest host Hatch Clymer. I love you, Vancouver, and it's been a pleasure being here today.
And I'm Claire Eagle. This show is produced entirely by New News 101 co-director Iqbal Ahmed. Thank you, Iqbal.
Woo!
From the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned now for Hot Mess at 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Thank you.